welcome. You have tuned into Paradigm Shifters here on wonderful BBS Radio. My name is Veronica Entwistle, and each week I try to bring to you someone who's making a difference on the planet, making a difference in the human collective. And today we have Vanda Mikulowski, who we've had before, and she's making a difference through comedy. Welcome to the show, Vanda.
Thank you so much, Veronica.
I'm so glad to talk to you again and to chuckle with you. And I know you're going on a big tour, so we're going to talk a lot about Vanda's tour and where you might be able to catch up with her in person. But in the meantime, let's get down to who you are and how did you find out you were a comedian?
What happened was I was in college in Philadelphia. I went out to a comedy club one night, and I saw stand-up comedy live for the first time, and I went, oh, my God, you know. And then I saw Richard Pryor, and I saw his movie, and I was in love with being heard, you know, the idea that I could be heard. And that was the cultural zeitgeist at the time, right? We had gone from the 50s into the 60s.
Were you a funny kid? What were you like as a kid?
I wasn't that funny, I don't think. I was kind of a rebellious kid.
Oh, really?
You know? My mom, I remember when one of my teachers wouldn't let me go to the bathroom because I was talking all class, and my mom said, went home and let her know he wouldn't let me go to the bathroom. She said, why don't you tell him that you have your period and you have to change your Kotex? And I was like, okay, I can't wait. And I went in there the next day and I said it, you know, and I was expecting the big laugh from all my classmates. I said it and I looked around and no one laughed or anything.
Oh, really?
All I heard was my Mr. Collegian, my history teacher, drop his pencil on his desk.
Oh, that's the right.
Thank you, Vanda.
But did he let you go from then on?
He did.
So you were actually a bit of a cut up in class in a way, weren't you?
More daring and rebellious than funny, you know, just shocking.
Yeah. Kind of. Well, maybe that's the key to transformation anyway, isn't it? Shock is
that?
Maybe that's a key for transformation.
Maybe.
You know, shock me out of my complacency, wake me up, right?
Yeah, it could be. It's sometimes it's not necessarily effective, you know.
Especially if people faint.
Yeah.
So, tell me a little bit more about your background and your history, like your childhood. Did you know that you were spiritual as a little kid, or what were you like besides being rebellious? What were you rebelling against? What were you aiming for? And did you write a lot? Were you creative?
Well, no. Every child is creative, I think, and every child is spiritual until we brainwash them, you know, with religion and with, you know, our belief systems and this and that. Even metaphysical people brainwash their kids with belief systems, you know. I think kids are naturally in awe of everything as it is, exactly as it is, and hence they're in touch with God. You know,
but
I think
we come in with our personal journey. So, like, for example, each kid isn't the same in terms of how he would interpret God or be driven for or against spirituality or whatever. I mean, some of that comes with us too, doesn't it?
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know.
Did it well with you? When did you start seeking in terms of spiritual activity?
You know, I remember I was in like 7 or 8 lying in a field with my brother and looking at all the magnificence around me of creation and like the oddity, like you're kind of as a kid present to the oddity of being alive at all, the mm-hmm. bizarreness of existence mm-hmm. at all, right?
Yeah.
Like, God, I'm alive. Look, there's blue veins in my arms coursing with red blood. Isn't it weird? And I know everyone has a lot of theories and a lot of concepts about it, and, you know, there's the whole religious myth of you better be good for goodness sake.
Were you raised
yeah,
Catholic or anything?
I was raised Roman Catholic,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, most religions have some kind of a dualistic moral, kind of good, bad, right, wrong thing.
That's for sure.
You know, what's a sin, what isn't. And so I was like, that was a hard concept for me to wrap my mind around, you know. For example, like I could watch a little spider wrap up a fly and suck out its guts, and that was okay. That was natural. And I'm wondering, what's natural and what isn't? Is it okay for a guy to wrap up another guy and suck out his guts? You know, no, that's not right. Like, God doesn't like that. But God's okay about the spider doing it. Like, what is natural, you know? And I asked all those kind of questions, and I wondered what the, you know, when you're younger, you don't even need to think about what the truth or what the belief is. You're just there, kind of, you know, in it, in loving life and reality. And then there's the philosophical concepts that people teach you. Like, you know, that was always a little, you know, there's an abyss between the two,
mm-hmm.
It seems. You know, and so I'm a kid going to my brother, someone's not telling us something. Let's find out what's going on. And we opened up to, like, a lot of wacky ideas, you know, because we thought the mainstream doesn't know, because they're all a bunch of people saying God is a man, like a man figure who's going, you better behave. And then what are the options then?
Well, so you didn't believe that God was a man yourself. You didn't think that was sensible, right? Or was that right?
Well, no, I did believe it for a while. They told me that my Protestant friends weren't going to go to heaven. I was I remember being so sad when I found that out, that my best friend Carrie Herman, who taught me how to kiss,
mm-hmm.
by pushing my lips up against her mirror,
mm-hmm.
and going, you know, like, she was like my dearest friend. We had like these great moments of childhood together. And then I found out that she's not going to have everlasting life with me because she's Protestant. I was like, oh my God, it's devastating to a kid. So I guess I did believe it to some degree, what I was being taught, but I questioned it. I, you know, everyone looked so miserable too. You know, no one looked happy.
Yeah, I used to say when I was little, as all the big people who know how to live are mad and sad, and I don't want to be like that.
Exactly, Veronica. That's exactly right. So you begin to look, you know, and I was open to all the wackiest ideas. Like someone told me when I was 17 or 18 that your thoughts create your reality. And I went, huh, I guess there's a 50-50 chance of that being as true as anything else.
So what'd you do?
You know?
What'd you do about it?
I began to look at this first metaphysical course I took was called Dimensional Macrostructural Alignment, DMA.
Oh, wow.
And it was a course about how to use the power of your mind to create your reality and listen to these tapes and all this stuff. So I really got into that idea, and I thought, oh, my God, I'm having some miracles here. In fact, this is true. The quantum field, the subatomic realm, does respond to your intention. Now, there's a whole bunch of people who think the subatomic realm does not respond to your intention. I tend to think that they have evidence of that because it actually does.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. And, of course, it's gone a long way since you were 17. Not that you're more than 20, but...
Yeah, exactly.
But, I mean, many people have proven that since. And are you still doing that? Are you still doing thoughts your guiding lights here?
Say that again, I'm sorry?
Are you still leading your life with your thoughts, with conscious thinking?
Well, I wouldn't say 100% of the time. You know, I mean, so I was just listening to someone say, you know what you really believe in is like if you're walking in the woods and a bear pops out and goes, ah, you believe in that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I believe in lack.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes I believe in money would make me happy. You know, to be real honest with you, sometimes I believe in I'm not enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know.
So there's a lot of gods out there that take up my mental space, the real estate in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm committed to is that I have that I have a powerful and free life, masterful, extraordinary, you know. So it's like a discipline, though. It's like I have to stay vigilant about which thoughts I attach to.
Mm-hmm.
you know, because there's two things. There's the thoughts that go through your head, and then, of course, there's the person who either listens or not.
Mm-hmm. Or else there's the thought process that it's kind of emanating from the people around you and the social context in which you are.
Yeah, well, yeah. You were never victims of that, I don't think, but there is stuff like kind of that we haven't questioned yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the background, like we haven't questioned sometimes, it's, I don't know, what haven't I questioned? It's hard to know what you haven't questioned. It's a blind spot, right?
Is your mom a questioner? Is your mom and dad, do they question all this?
My dad was a scientist. He loved the guys of his day who were sort of cutting edge, were like Buckminster Fuller, the guy, the geodesic dome
right.
guy.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, that was pretty cutting edge. But dad was an allopathic physician. He was a urologist, and he believed in the AMA and pharmaceutical industry, and he believed in the power of the American Medical Association that, I think he actually believed the intention of the AMA was to heal, and that the intention of pharmaceutical companies was to heal, and the intention of most doctors was to heal. That they had some, and it is in some cases, I think, but certainly not all. You know,
is he still living?
No, he died in 1977.
Oh, he died young, didn't he?
Yeah, at 48. And you know what? I'm 49. I just turned 49, and I'm so happy.
Yeah, that's pretty hard to lose him at that age, kind of in the prime of his life.
Mm-hmm. I was 17 years old, yeah.
Oh, wow. So do you think that that triggered some of your search as well?
Yeah. And you know, when my brother, who was the love of my life, had drowned a couple years earlier. So it was my brother and then my dad, the two biggest male figures in my life, you know. And then I went on kind of a self-destructive tear for a long time, not wanting to feel any pain.
Mm-hmm.
And then
that's kind of understandable, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Looking back now, although, you know, we can, it's so amazing how we can take this gift of life that's so great and use it for to check out rather than check in.
I think it's really interesting, though, because what happens when you lose very important people like that close to your heart, the initiation process is huge, and very often a component of it is destructive.
Yeah.
So it kind of makes sense that you would refine, you know, it seems like to me anyway, it's not just like taking a sidestep and ignoring life. It's kind of a refinement process in an odd way, isn't it?
You know what Carolyn May says? She says that we all had like some pact before we came here,
mm-hmm.
like on the plane of bliss or whatever, that I said, okay, I'm going to come down and I'm going to be heartbroken because you guys died. Will you do that? Will you die at 50? Will you die at 48? Okay, great. It's going to be heartbreaking for me. And I'm going to do drugs and alcohol for a long time. And I'll have this great body that I'm like built like a bull so that I can withstand all that and still stay alive. And then on the other side of that, what do I get? I get a life that's really, really rich where I can be a huge contribution to other human beings because I've lived through some pain. I've had my heart broken, and then I've realized, you know, you can have your heart broken and still keep it open. You know, still keep your heart soft even after you've been, you know, you've lost a lot.
Well, and don't you think that after you go through that, you begin to treasure a lot of the connections you make with a lot more vividness than before?
Yes. Everything becomes, life becomes a little more urgent and immediate.
Mm-hmm. And more important to express your own, at least from my understanding, for many people, it seems then it's more important to express who you are. You're the only one in the universe with your deal, right?
And to be able to be with another human being and drink them in completely exactly as they are and have that be a gift.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, we're all gifts for each other. Our presence is a gift, and we don't often treat each other that way. No, it didn't immediately have me appreciate life. It didn't immediately have me appreciate life. it had me be a victim for a long time, like, poor me. Mm-hmm. Look at what I've been through.
Usually it takes, like, 12, 15, 20 years, I think.
It can.
I've heard that even from people with near-death experiences that, you know, on the average, it took people like 10, 12, 15 years to turn that around from, you know, being victimized by whatever the trauma was, and then coming up with their great awakening. You know, a lot of that process was a long process.
Well, I don't know. Transformation actually happens in a split second. It happens when you no longer tell the story to yourself that you're a victim of circumstances, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then that can happen in a split second. I've seen it happen, you know, with people. I've seen people transform issues that were hindering them for 30 years in 1 second, for 40 years, for 50 years, things that have suppressed them and kept them small.
Yeah, I've seen that too. I guess all I'm saying is sometimes to respect those periods of life where we go into rather a dullness or a victimization, just respect it because we're done with that, and you've turned it real fast, I think, from then on, hey?
Yeah, well, I've turned it when I've turned, I don't know about fast or slow, but I spent 30 years alcoholic, you know.
Oh,
pretty
that's
much.
Cool. Well, that, I won't go too far into that because I want to go into comedy. When we got disconnected by phone a few minutes ago, and you were just talking about how you finally discovered comedy, and I don't know how old you were at that point. Were you still alcoholic at that point?
I was 18. Was it 18? It was 1980. I was in college, 59, 69, 70. You know, it must have been in 80 or something. I was like 20. And I found it in when I was in college in Philadelphia. And, and then I didn't know how to get up the guts. It took me about a year to get up the guts to do it. Mm-hmm. And then when I finally did it, I fell in love with New York City and being with all those exciting, funny men. And basically, I wanted to hang out with the funny guys. You know, I had a big thing for men, for smart men. I wanted the smart, funny men to love me, you know. As you can tell from my psychology, I was a little male-oriented. I love the men. And I dated Bill Maher, who you know his show on
Yeah, I like his show a lot, actually. It's a real challenging show.
Yeah, he was a challenging guy.
He'd have to be watching that intensity. And he's hilarious at times, too, but he's pretty wound up, isn't he?
Yeah, he's got an opinion, and that's what people actually love about him is how opinionated he is.
So did he evoke that in you, or were you already like that?
Well, I'm an opinionated, righteous, self-righteous person, all on my own merit.
But I find, you know, there's some people that activate us and help us to sort of like awaken to some aspects of our nature. I just wondered if he did that with you.
You know what he did for me is he really created some detours in comedy. He held the bar really, really high for me in comedy, and it said, do not make the same mistakes most women in comedy make, which is trying to be a woman in comedy. Be an excellent monologist, someone who's doing a monologue about their experience. Let the fact that you're a woman be, you know, secondary to that.
Uh-huh.
Be an outrageous expression. And smart, and not, you know, like he let me know what was overdone, what was hackneyed, what was trite, and what was too broad, you know, to hit him over the head, and encourage me to go more subtle, and so he had some really high standards in comedy.
Hmm.
He's great.
Are you still friends with him?
No, I was in his autobiography.
Oh, good.
And I read it, and last night I was backstage at his show, and I met him, and he goes, oh, my God, you know, that character that I wrote wasn't all you. It was an amalgam of you and a few other people. I go, it's okay, Bill, it's okay. So, it wasn't the sweetest picture of me.
Aww.
But
so were you cranky with him, or did you just accept it as a creative right?
I was manipulative. You know what? Like, I got kicked out of my apartment, and I said, guess what? We're living together.
Oh.
And he's like, I didn't plan on that, you know. So we lived together for a short time because I was manipulative.
Well, yeah. You're really honest. Yeah. So you went tracking the comedian's world, and then you went into the spiritual world. What happened?
Well, I had, become disenchanted with my worldly endeavors. I had gotten into Rampa, the channeled entity, or allegedly, I don't know what's happening over there. There's a woman who says stuff, and it sounds like a guy, and he claims to be a 35,000-year-old warrior. But the stuff that was coming out of that mouth was so startling to me. I didn't care who it was or if it was real or not. It didn't matter to me. It was just so stunning, that stuff. It was the first time that I had heard a cosmology where there was no right and wrong. And I had never heard anyone say that. I know it's existed before then, you know, Rumi talked about it. You know, Rumi, years and years ago, the Persian mystic poet.
Sure, and that was 1100 or 1200 or something.
Exactly.
But actually, I did some studying of Rampa, never in person, but in tapes and so on, so I do know some of his work, and it was pretty good. It was pretty powerful. What?
Yeah, it's fascinating. And those of your listeners who don't know, Rampa is the entity that was in the movie What the Bleep. That came out years ago.
That's right, yeah. Oh, my. And so you studied him for quite a while, his teachings, eh?
Yes.
And then did you leave comedy entirely?
Not really. I played around with it in Seattle a little bit. And then there was a time around, after my last television show, I did a show on Lifetime called Girls Night Out. And then I just kind of said, that's it. I'm kind of done. I think I'm done. And then when my brother's movie, What the Bleep, came out, I call it my brother's movie, but he was involved. I realized that I'm not such a weirdo. I don't need to sit out in the woods on my Zafu cushion meditating. That all these guys that I loved, and besides Rampa, I was really interested in Eckhart Tolle and Byron Katie, and I love Wayne Dyer, you know, and I was, Rampa actually encouraged his students to read everything and study everyone out there, and except other channeled entities. Kind of about himself about that, but everyone else, you know, it's like study them, study the scientists, study quantum physics and what they're discovering about the dovetailing of consciousness and science. And so I would study all that stuff and then fall in love with these concepts. And then I went to Landmark Education, which to me is the height of what's available out there in terms of enlightenment experiences. That's why I say I've seen people turn things around, because that's the course where I think it really happens more often than anywhere else I've seen, that people get free from the past. And so I did a lot of that work. And then when my brother's movie came out, I said, oh my God, there's an audience for this in the world. I can't believe it. And Hollywood didn't know that. Like when What the Bleep first was, they were trying to get distribution for that. The people in Hollywood distribution companies said, you know what, there's no demographic that's interested in that kind of mindy, spiritual, blah, blah, blah entertainment. And then, after there were lines around the corner in all the smaller markets due to my brother.
yeah, because that went like wildfire, didn't it? What the Bleep.
Ooh. Well, yeah, it was because my brother works like me, like, you know, just sits and makes things happen, you know, and he really, it was a labor of love for him, and he got lines around the corner.
Well, and Vanda, wasn't that a lot of Rampa people?
There were people who had studied with Rampa in that movie. Now, it wasn't, a lot of people think it was a marketing tool for the school. Well, it's not true. Jay-Z is not that good, a marketer. She's not that organized at marketing like that. It would have been brilliant had it been. But it was three students who have since left the school. They were interested in Rampa, among many other things. And they happened to want to do a film about that. So it was related, yeah. And not the sinister thing everybody's saying is, oh, they're trying to recruit and like that. It wasn't like
that. Well, and I never actually heard that. I just thought that it was spawned by a lot of the Rampa, the intelligence. There's just so much intelligence involved in that school of enlightenment, and I realize other evolutionary concepts. So it was very exciting. I think it was a very, very huge paradigm shifting movie, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I loved when I was looking at your websites and so on, and you were talking about, or at least somewhere I saw you talking about quantum comedy, and I'm going, oh, yeah. So what does that mean? That comes from that whole concept, doesn't it?
Yeah, quantum comedy. I started writing about quantum physics and the science of the observer, and, you know, if there's not, you know, quantum physics basically says that there's nothing out there in external reality independent of our perception of it, right? So there's no validity to what's out there independent of how we perceive it. And if that's true, then no one's a jerk on the freeway. That, what are you going to do, right? If I cut you off in traffic, you can go, hey, buddy, you occur in my reality as a jerk. Hey, buddy, I'm accessing the jerk in me in order to perceive you as a jerk. I mean, what can you say, you know? So it's like, yeah. So I wrote some comedy about some quantum ideas, yes.
So when did you start actually performing? So you at 18, got hitched into comedy, and between that time and the time you went into the spiritual studies a little bit more full-time, or a lot more full-time, did you do a lot of stand-up comedy?
I did. I was in New York City, and I was going around the village, and with a friend of mine on his little moped, and we'd be singing in the streets. It's so exciting to do all these little open mics, and I toured around the country. I was friends with Sam Kinison, the loudmouth screaming comic, irreverent guy, very funny. And he, there's an airplane going overhead. And he and I had a, you know, great time touring all around. I did Los Angeles quite a bit, and Seattle markets, and all the one-nighters and the hell gigs. They call them the toilet gigs, you know.
Was it hard? Did you like it, or did it just wear on you, or was it all like smoky bars and a lot of drunkenness?
I loved that. I loved smoky bars and drinking and smoking. I loved it. I loved being around funny people. I loved that whole life of it. I loved dressing up. I loved being a star, a little rock star. You know, I loved all that.
Mm.
Loved the whole lifestyle of
it. So what changed it?
Well, you get tired of that. Plus, I stopped drinking. I stopped drinking when I turned 40, and then I went, you know what, I'm done drinking. I don't want to be back in bars anymore. I was just done. I stopped watching television and kind of became restive. Became a yoga and meditation teacher, you know, and So
what's so bad about you? You say that you can be bad, too. What's that?
Well, when I say that, I really mean that we're all an amalgam of what we would call good and what we would call bad, you know what I mean, in our own understanding. So Debbie Ford talks about the shadow side.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of times when people are spiritual, they are quote-unquote spiritual, whatever that means, they think that means good.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That means, like, when you go to churches, like even New Thought churches, there's a lot of good people there who are being good and policing other people's thoughts, and, you know, telling you how you should think instead of the way you think. You know, like,
And going back to the shadow, if you ignore the shadow and you live in denial, then there's a whole other problem, isn't there?
Yeah, and the problem is that we don't like to look bad, and it looks bad to be a liar or a fraud or a cheat or a thief. And I think that the degree to which we get comfortable with, yes, I am all those things, I'm inauthentic, pretending to be authentic. You know, that we're all nothing, pretending to be something. There's a major inauthenticity of the egoic mind, period, is we don't know what the hell we are. We're this eternal radiant essence somewhere floating in the vicinity of the skin bag. We call it I,
mm-hmm.
or I call yours you, mm-hmm. but I don't know what I'm talking about,
mm-hmm.
really. You know, so these metaphysical questions are fascinating. And then I actually think I'm a woman, and I'm a sister, and I'm, you know, friend, and I'm a, you know, the socioeconomic class, and my body weight, and all the things of form, we relate to those things. And that is all a lie, I think, you know. So
So what do you think? What do you think it's that we're spirit, we're essence? What do you think we're doing here, girl?
You know, I really like Socrates' approach to that. I don't know. And I'm not saying that, you know, I really like what Socrates would say. What his mantra every day was, I know nothing.
Hmm.
And that gives you a lot more freedom than saying, we're spiritual. We're radiant entities having a human experience. That's what we are. You know, because I think the Christians, the evangelical Christians might be right. Or the Mormons. Or anyone.
And maybe there is no right. Maybe it's all very unique.
Or that.
So what toured you back into the comedy world?
Well, my brother's movie did so well, and I thought, I want to be a part of that. I want to, and then a friend said, you know, no one's ever gone to Los Angeles to give anything. They usually go there to get something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'm too old for show business. I was 45. And he said, actually, rather than you're too old, you are at the age where you owe it to the world, given the enormity of your contribution.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah. Yeah, he said, you're a, this is not really a great compliment, but he said, you're an elder now. It's time to give back.
Hmm. Who said it, your brother?
No, well, it was my brother a little bit, but my brother has always been my champion and has said, you know, you can create whatever you want, wherever you are, at whatever age you are. If you don't recognize limitation and aging and all that stuff, if you don't recognize it, because we're all creative till the day we drop dead,
mm-hmm.
right? And so we give ourselves these reasons not to. But Rick Overton is a comic from Los Angeles who had called my brother and said, hey, let's do a movie called What the Bleep Is So Funny. So anyway, Veronica, now I'm actually doing a movie called the subtitle is What the Bleep Is So Funny.
Oh, great. So you're doing a movie. What are you doing in the movie, performing or?
I'm headlining. It's a concert movie.
Mm-hmm.
We have three comedians, mm-hmm. two guys that I've been working with, and a writer who's a two-time Emmy Award-winning writer from Dennis Miller Live, and my old friend Leah Krinsky. And we've been writing since December, Comedy of a Metaphysical Transformational Nature, and making fun of the being irreverent about the reverent stuff, you know. So I've been with those guys and doing that, and we're doing a concert movie with Straw Weissman, who was one of the associate producers from What the Bleep Do We Know, and my brother is on board, and we have a coach from Landmark Education, a friend of mine, Anurag Gupta, who's on board as well, producing this. And we're going to be shooting it in Sedona, Arizona, August 1st and 2nd. And what we're doing is we're filling a 230-seat theater called the Sedona Dream Theater.
Hmm.
And people get to come for free. A love offering.
Mm-hmm.
We're calling it a love offering deal. So we're going to fill up that big theater. We already got Hale Dwoskin from The Secret, and the mayor of Sedona is going to be interviewed, and Peggy Phoenix Dubrow does this great energy work, and so some great people. And
when's that going to be?
August 1st and 2nd at the Sedona Dream Theater.
That sounds pretty exciting, and then that's going to become a movie.
Yes. And people can go to spirituallyincorrectcomedy.com if they want to look at our website and get more information about that.
So where are you headed? Are you? And that's good. Spirituallyincorrect.com. Sorry about that. Well,
spirituallyincorrectcomedy.com.
Okay, spirituallyincorrectcomedy.com. Where are you headed? So you're headed to want to do movies. Is that going to be your next step?
Yes, that's one of the things. I also love live performance so much. There's nothing like that, being with people and watching light bulbs go off and presenting ideas that are, I think, great ideas.
How does comedy transform people? How does that work?
Well, how it works, I think one of the ways it works is that I keep myself transforming. In other words, I have to walk my talk in order to have it be anything but preaching.
Hmm.
You know? Any spiritual teacher whose butt isn't kind of on the line about it, and you know, I mean, I am rigorous with myself about my thoughts and stuff. So I watch myself do stupid things and stuff, and I love telling one on myself. And once I can tell one on myself, I think it allows if I access my own humanity, it allows others access to theirs.
So you just do your comedy about your life and your process.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. like I was dating a guy. I'm single, right? And I was dating a guy, and he asked me the funniest question. Now, you know what I look like. I'm no dog, right?
Right.
He asked me, "Are you a man?" And I'm like, "Oh my God, I can't believe you asked that." You know, and it was so like I couldn't decide if I was more insulted because he saw me as that unfeminine or he saw me as that deceptive, you know? And I'm like, this is the real stuff of life. It's kind of embarrassing, right? And I'm like, am I a man? And I started like kind of messing with him a little bit and saying, do you mean am I or was I? I said, can't you just let go of the past, honey? I mean, go over there and get my book, The Power of Now. It's right there next to my wrestling trophies. You know, I'm just messing with this guy. So the real stuff of my life like that, of how I dealt with stuff, you know, and
moving into the now. And also, you cracked him up, did you? I mean, he didn't know what to do.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, actually, I wrote this afterwards, and then I called him, and I told him that I'm writing a bit about what he asked me, and he never got back to me about that. Isn't that funny?
Well, was he a little scared? I mean, maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
So let's talk about your trip. I'm excited. I really loved some of the pieces that I saw online, so it'd be great to be at your shows, you know. What's your tour? Tell me about you're flying to Seattle today, and you're going to be performing in the Centralia Unity Church, right?
I am, the Centralia Unity Church in Centralia, and I think what do they call it? They call it Center for Positive Living, something like that, yeah.
Hmm.
And then I'm at the Mark, which is a restaurant in Olympia, on the 17th, 18th, and 19th, and people have to go to my website to buy tickets for that, which is... My website is www.vanda, my name, V-A-N-D-A, .us. So there's no .com, it's .us, vanda.us. And then I'm in Palm Springs, the 25th and the 26th. Oh, I'm going to Sedona for a little, going out to Sedona, Arizona to do some meeting of people and performing and creating a buzz for my movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to Palm Springs on the 25th and 26th, the Spiritual Enrichment Center of Palm Springs. And then August 1st and 2nd is the movie in Sedona, Arizona, Friday and Saturday, August 1st and 2nd.
That is going to be such a blast for people, isn't it?
Yeah. And they can also, if they just want to go... spirituallyincorrectcomedy.com is where they can go. And if they want to email me, I'll tell you what, I'll give you my personal email because it's just us, right? VandaYoga@hotmail.com. That's my personal everyday email that I answer, VandaYoga@hotmail.com. If you're interested in coming to the Sedona thing, just email me and we'll talk about it and how you can sign up for that.
And it's free to get in, but you're participating in a great project. Is that right?
It's free, and you're participating. You get to be sort of like a movie extra.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd like to know if you plan on coming to it. It would help us to get a sense of how many people are RSVPing so we don't have to turn a lot of people away or anything like that.
Oh, it just sounds like a blast. So tell me about spiritually incorrect. Now, what on earth does that mean to you?
Well, I used to call myself a spiritual comedian,
mm-hmm.
but I just, it doesn't really scratch the itch for me, you know? Spiritual means what?
What does it mean?
You know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I also...
And what does correct mean?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
So, the term politically incorrect, it's sort of an inside joke because I used to date Bill Maher, but... spiritually incorrect, we just sort of wanted to give a sense that we're irreverent, that we're not sacrosanct.
Mm.
You know, some people get sacrosanct, you know, even if they're not religious, they call themselves spiritual, they can get pretty sacrosanct about it. And so our job is to take nothing, to make, a good comedian will hold nothing sacred, you know, and yet, for me, everything's sacred at the same time. It's an everything-nothing proposition.
Well, so what's the transformational part of it? Is that when... No, well, I'll let you explain it. I have some ideas of what it is.
Well, we have a guy on board, Anurag Gupta, who's a transformational coach. He's actually led transformational courses all around the world. They're called the Landmark Forum. and which grew out of Est years ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now Landmark is a phenomenally successful weekend that people take where they have breakthroughs in their lives and they mm-hmm. let go of big chunks of the past and stuff. So he's very adept at walking people through the spaces they need to walk through in order to have freedom and power in places where they didn't have it.
Hmm.
And so we're like, can we take his strength as a transformational coach and take our strengths as stand-up comedians and combine them and have the comedy show actually be something that transforms people so they leave different. They actually leave there with power and freedom that they didn't have, like telling the truth where they used to lie or able to see the absurdity of self-invalidation and laugh at their own self-invalidation, things like that.
So it can actually really bust up blocks, sort of densities in the body that could create illness, right?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah. When you make them laugh, you have the keys to the matrix, you're in,
yeah.
you know, you have the keys to the matrix. And, yeah, so he's our guy. We're doing that. And what we're up to as a group, me and and Leah and Eric and Jerry, is we really want to transform the planet through stand-up comedy.
I think that's brilliant. So you're going to teach comedy as well? You're going to help people, coach people to do it too?
We might do that. We might do that because we have lots of, I've had like about 20 people, comedians from down here approach me to be part of this group. So, don't quite know how to include them without making our dynamic unwieldy right now, but I mm-hmm. intend to come up with a way to include people who are interested in joining our revolution, because it is a revolution. It's a whole new genre of comedy.
Go ahead.
Well, you don't go out to mainstream nightclubs and see stuff that's this challenging, you know,
mm-hmm.
and or that is intentional comedy-based, you know, comedy with an outcome-based comedy. Comedy where, like Chris Rock, when he goes on stage, he's brilliant, right? What he does is brilliant, but he doesn't go there with an intention to, I don't think, to alter these people at a core level of who they're being.
Mm.
He probably goes on stage with an intention to make them think and make them laugh,
mm-hmm.
right, which he does amazingly well. And but so what we're doing is something that's actually trying to, what our intention is to have people altered.
Yeah, it's kind of an evocative thing, isn't it? So you're trying to evoke the... you can bust people open so they can find a clarity of their own power and their own potential, too.
Mm.
Is that right?
Yummy stuff. Yeah, the yummy stuff of life.
Oh, I think it's very exciting. So are you on YouTube, and are you getting all kinds of like little movies out there?
I am on YouTube. I'm not adept at the Internet, at putting things online and stuff. So if they happen to be there, they happen to be there because someone did it for me, you know. So, but if you Googled my name, Vanda Mikulowski, there'd be, I think there's four YouTube videos on there.
And will your brother be your marketer?
He will be for this movie. He marketed What the Bleep so well. I said, would you come on board? He said, yes, 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 yes. So I'm thrilled for that.
And he's behind Lynn McTaggart right now with all her growth and stuff, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, Lynn McTaggart, the intention experiment. Yep.
So he's a pretty intentionally awake guy. He must have gone through a lot of the spiritual evolution with you, did he?
He was my, you know, my dad died and my other brother died, and Pavel was like, he became everything to me, poor guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
He had to be everything to this young girl. He's 2 years my senior, and he pretty much raised me in many ways. I just, you know, our spiritual paths have dovetailed the whole way. Mm. Love my brother.
Oh, that's great. So who are you now? Have you changed greatly doing comedy yourself? I mean, has it been a huge change agent for you?
I'm, boy, that's a good question. Who am I? I think I'll defer to the Socratic ideal of I don't know. What I can say is I've learned how to invent myself, you know, and how to... you know, most people, if you ask them how they are, they don't really have an invention, but I'm inventing myself as a champion of humanity, as someone around whom others experience themselves as great,
mm-hmm.
and a woman of peace.
Oh, that's a wonderful thing to be. All right, well, you're going to be on the road very soon, and I appreciate that you've had time to talk to us today. And let me see. I think we've said your websites, and we've given people your tour information. Give us a final website.
Okay, my website is vanda.us. If they want to come to the Olympia or the Palm Springs show, I think they can get information on there. And then my guys and me, we're spirituallyincorrectcomedy.com. And they can find out about the Sedona thing. Or people can just send me an email personally, vandayoga@hotmail.com. vandayoga@hotmail.com. And if I get bombarded, I'll call you back and go, oh, my God, I love them. Okay.
Tell me, are you still teaching yoga?
I do teach 3 mornings a week on the beach in Venice, California, when I'm in town.
Tell me this. Do people laugh while they're doing yoga?
Yes, I do comedy yoga. I've made up a new fusion. Comedy yoga. I do stand up and then I teach yoga.
Oh wow! So what happens? People are already giggling and they're moving and laughing and.
Well, I do it at the beginning of class, and then I move people into meditation, and then I move them into poses, and some of the longer poses
mm-hmm.
I do jokes in. Little when I say jokes, I don't mean like two guys walk into a bar jokes, but just telling funny monologues, funny stories, and stuff like that. And it's just sweet. It's just really sweet. We just have the best time, and it's lighthearted, and it's just beautiful. I can't wait to, I think I'm going to be on a talk show called The Bonnie Hunt Show,
mm-hmm.
doing some comedy yoga, because the producers just called me recently, so I can't wait to be on national TV with that. That'll be cool.
I think it's so refreshing to hear that we can chuckle while we do our yoga and just have a great time opening.
I know, isn't it? Oh, my God.
And the other thing that you said that I really appreciate is that you're learning to invent yourself all the time. People need to hear that. That's what we can do, isn't it?
It is. It is. Because, you know, I'll be honest, by default, I'm about pleasure and comfort and ease and security.
Are you getting all those things through comedy?
No, what I'm saying is by default, I play safe. By default,
okay.
I'm not out on the skinny branches of life. That takes creation and invention to actually be someone who's willing to take a risk and be someone who's extraordinary and be someone who's forgiving and loving and honest and all that stuff. You know what I mean? Like it's not the path of least resistance, but it's like it's a great life. Yeah.
Oh.
Pleasure and comfort. I get some of that. You know, I get some of that.
You got good people around you, don't you?
Oh.
Yeah.
I have to. That is so. If you have any youngsters listening, that's the thing that was the most in my spiritual journey. What meant the most to me is actually environment is stronger than willpower. You know, you keep the people around you who exalt you and hold you up, and that will keep you so buoyant. Because the way people listen to us, the way people perceive us is we live into that. You know, like George Bernard Shaw, I think it was, said, we have the power to exalt or dehumanize everyone in every moment, right?
And that's the truth, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He said, if you treat people as they are, you make them worse.
So you need to treat them
as they might be,
mm-hmm.
to hold a very high bar for them and love them into what your vision is, you know. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't funny this call. I'm funny too. Tell your listeners I'm funny. I'm kind of intense.
You know what? You've been very inspiring, Vanda, and I'm just glad who you are and making a difference on the planet, and thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Come out and laugh, everybody.
See you later. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Wow, that was Vanda Mikulowski, and I know that she is really very hilarious. But one of the things I love about Vanda is she has... Wow, that amazing light inside and that really strong intention to lift and support the shifting collective of these days. She has different words than I would use, but that doesn't matter. Her light is really very powerful. So I'm really looking forward to her spiritually incorrect comedy movie. And the fact her brother had a lot to do with getting the bleep out there, this is really exciting news for our collective. This is Veronica Entwistle saying I'm looking forward to seeing you again next week on BBS Radio at 5 o'clock for Paradigm Shifters. Much love and many blessings.
Well, partner, we got our pork and beans. We got our coffee. and we got this real nice campfire. Now all we need is the radio. Go get that radio so we can listen to BBS.
Gosh darn, boss. Got this here radio, but we ain't got no batteries.
Well, I told you to buy some batteries yesterday, but you forgot to buy them today.
A man can only do so many things in one day. Go into town and get some for the both of us. Go ahead, make my day. Dag nabbit, you and your BBS radio.
Hey, everybody, this is Nathan Drake. I am the star of science fiction show Lex the Dark Zone. Well, I hope you're listening to Dr. Fred Bell's show on bbsradio.com. Well, if you want to do Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy.
Health Science and.
Oh, what was it?
Health Science and.
Health Science.
Just say you're listening to Dr. Bell's Health Science and.
And Energy.
Health Science and.
Energy show?
That yeah. works. In fact, I can edit.
Health, Energy, and Science show.
Health Science and.
We just call it the Dr. Bell show.
Okay, well, that's what I did.
Same thing, only a little shorter. Yeah, same thing. Health Science and.
Hi, this is Jeff Van Vonderen from A&E's show Intervention, and you're listening to BBSradio.com.
Sometimes when I'm all alone.
BBSradio.com, your source to a world of inspiring information, removing fear through communication, engaging, powerful, unforgettable. My name is Spider Turner, and you can hear my music right here on the BBS.
Storable food. Storable food. HempUSA.org has an inexpensive, nutritionally dense, high-frequency food. Hemp, known around the world, will boost your immune system and increase energy levels. Detoxifies the body and reduces junk food cravings. Burns fat and builds muscle. And is easy to digest, non-allergenic, and gluten-free. Can be made into smoothies, breads, muffins, pancakes, cookies, you name it. The entire planet should make this a staple food in their diet. The seeds will scrape the colon wall. The powder will feed the body vital minerals. And the oil will clean the arterial walls and feed the brain. Try our powder, seeds, and oil today. Call 908-691-2608 or go to hempusa.org. That's 908-691-2608 at hempusa.org. Remember, vacuum packaging this food will have at least a 5-year shelf life stored in a cool, dark, dry place. Holidays are coming, and this would make a perfect gift for friends and family. Call today, 908-691-2608 at hempusa.org. And remember, let your food be your medicine, and your medicine be your food.
You were listening to The Peaceful Planet synthesized from spirit through the mediumship of Robert Murray. Listen in to The Peaceful Planet every Saturday at 12 noon Central to music from the angelic realms, including inspired songs from John Lennon, George Harrison, and Michael and the band. This is show host Marcia McMahon inviting you to join us as we share messages from the Ascended Masters and the Archangels, as we bring you in to a higher vibration of love and peace for the planet. Hear my weekly interviews with cutting-edge world teachers and musical talent.
Do you like music, angels, and channeling? Are you spiritual, a psychic, or a healer? We are one on the Peaceful Planet Show at www.bbsradio.com every Saturday at 12 noon Central Time.